beautiful people. Welcome to it. Week is underway. Monday edition of Stokely and Josh, and we rock with you 10 to 2 every single weekday. Stoke is out today. Matt Smith is in. Matt Smith, good morning to you, buddy. How you doing today?
I'm doing great, man. We're finally coming out of this little, you know, snowmageddon wave we had last week.
Yeah.
Everything's going to be gone by, like, Wednesday. It's supposed to be 60s all week. Sign me up. I'm in a good mood. It's a Monday. We've got a bracket finally, Josh. Right. I'm excited, man.
We have a ton to get into. Yeah, brackets are set. Rams and Buffs are dancing. A little bit, kind of dancing. And actually, we're going to start right there. Big Nuggets and Abs weekend, plus some quarterback movement that we shall discuss throughout the day. But let's start there. Brackets are set. Rams and Buffs both going dancing, kind of, right? Like, they bought a ticket to the dance.
They got in the door. They're just not past the bouncer yet. You know what I'm saying?
That's
like,
what I like.
You know, it's funny. I said yesterday on the air on our Sunday show that it was a play-in game.
Yeah.
And somebody else said, no, it's not a play-in game. It's a legitimate NCAA berth. And you're right. It is a legitimate berth.
I don't agree.
Right. It's a play-in game for all intents and purposes. The real shame of it is they're both going to Dayton, but they're not playing each other.
Yeah.
That's the real shame of it. I was actually looking at the selection committee stipulations and guidelines or things they consider yesterday, the official booklet, and it typically says if there's a rematch on the board, try to avoid it at all costs in the second and third round, which essentially means we'll never give you that matchup in the first round, which is a shame.
It is.
Screw convention. Let's see a Rocky Mountain showdown in the NCAA tournament. Yeah. That would have been a lot of fun. But either way.
Cater to us. That's what we want the most.
Exactly.
So, it is the Buffs and Rams in the play-in games. And look, I get it. If I'm on the team, I'm telling my homies playing in the NCAA tournament coming up this week, but I'm not on the team.
And they look at you, they're like, okay.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, well, just win the first game, and then you will be. Yeah.
The tournament starts on Thursday. The Buffs and Rams are going to play Tuesday, Wednesday, but nonetheless, a chance to actually go dancing. Tuesday will be the first matchup. That's where the Rams will take on Virginia. A number 10 overall seed is up for grabs and an opportunity to go play Florida in the real round one of the NCAA tournament. The Buffs also battling for a 10 seed over on the south side. Wednesday evening, they'll take on the Broncos from Boise State and a chance to play, who they got? Texas, I believe.
No, other way around.
Oh, I flipped it.
Yeah, you flipped it. Buffs have a chance to play Florida if they beat Boise, and CSU will play Texas if they beat Virginia.
7-10, both sides of the bracket. So apologies there, flipped it around.
Yeah.
Let's start first with, sounds like we both kind of agree with play-in games and how we feel about them.
Yeah.
But did the Rams get screwed by sitting in a play-in game the way they are Tuesday and Wednesday?
You know, this bracket, the way they seeded this was interesting, Josh. I disagreed with some of the things that they did. Some of it made sense. However, they just told us, the committee told us, with the Mountain West Conference Tournament Championship winner being Utah State getting 8th seed, exactly what they feel about the Mountain West. Because that's the highest seed you get, right? New Mexico is an 11 seed. And when you look at the net rankings, and then there's all these analytics that you can look at that determine what kind of a season you had based upon strength of schedule and all these other factors. Well, they came out with this net ranking a few years ago, and that was supposed to mean a lot. Yeah. That was supposed to really matter. They were supposed to seed based upon where you fell in the net, not the top 25 poll, not any of these other polls. It was supposed to be all about the net. Well, this year, the committee didn't even really look at the net, it feels like, because if they had, CU and CSU would be higher than what they got in. However, it felt like because it was such a bad week for some of these other bubble teams that CU and CSU kind of just kept getting pushed down the docket a little bit. Had Colorado beaten Oregon on Saturday night, that would have changed some things.
Sure.
They probably are maybe an 8, maybe a 7 seed even. However, what's Oregon? Oregon's an 8, right?
Oregon, I believe, is an 8.
Yeah, Oregon's an 8. They play that 8-9 against South Carolina. Mm-hmm. So that would have probably, or no, Oregon's an 11. Excuse me, Oregon's an 11. So they might have actually just been in, but they wouldn't have had to gone to Dayton to do it first.
Well, I mean, that's the better play. You want to play in the real round one or earn the chance to play in round one. And look, I said this all year, Matt. I thought that the Rams were a better basketball team than the Buffaloes were all season. The way they started, the top 25 wins, them being in the top 25 a couple different times, they got all the way up to 12, 13 and something in the Rams this
13,
year.
13, yeah.
I thought they were always the better team. But what Tad had his Buffaloes doing to end the season, I mean, they started playing the best brand of basketball they'd played all year in their final 7, 8, maybe even 9 games.
Well, they won 8 in a row.
Down the stretch, yeah.
Yeah.
And I thought the Buffaloes, if any, Maybe the Buffaloes deserve to get that, you know, automatic bid. We're going in there the way they played down the stretch. And the Rams, they ran into a very powerful conference. This is weird to say out loud. In the Mountain West, it was just a good basketball conference this year. And they had to, you know, make their way through the gauntlet that the Mountain West was.
Yeah, Colorado just, you know, to get the automatic bid, the automatic, like you said, they would have had to beat Oregon. To get an at-large bid, they probably would have had to done more in their non-conference. It kind of goes back to the non-conference. If you're the Buffs, they didn't capitalize on the opportunities. Most of them, they got Miami. That was the one they got in Brooklyn. But outside of that, lost to Florida State, lost to CSU, you know, so I understood where they were. However, the Rams being the last team in the tournament, not just in the play-in game, they were the last team in the tournament. That was a little bit lower than expected. And in fact, I talked to some buddies up there at CSU, told me they're all scrambling because none of them expected that. And they had to leave today at like 10 a.m. because they play on Tuesday. Yeah, that's a quick turnaround. I feel bad for the CSU fan base because essentially, unless you have nothing going on in your life, you can't really make that, you know, quick turnaround from it. Let's just say you went to the Mountain West tournament, you know, in Vegas. Mm-hmm. So you were there Thursday. Maybe you left Friday at the earliest, or maybe your plans were for Saturday. Well, now you got to flip around and fly to Dayton by Tuesday. That ain't happening. So that's gonna be tough.
Have mom or dad cut a check. You'd be all right.
No, that's Boulder. That's Boulder. Yeah. That's you flipped it again. You flipped it again. You flipped it again. Yeah. So look, I think it'll be a good. First of all, it's a great platform for the state of Colorado for basketball.
National television, like the world will be watching the Buffs and Rams.
As long as you have True TV.
Yeah, right.
As long as you have True TV.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting because CU played Boise last year, and Boise pretty physically beat them up, and that's largely the same team. And what Colorado did in that second half against Oregon concerned me a little bit. I thought, Josh, and I don't know what you felt about it, but I thought they looked tight all game. I did. And then in the second half, it was a lot of standing around and watching for KJ Simpson to make a play. Unfortunately, nobody else came to his aid. He had 23 points. Luke O'Brien was their second leading scorer with 11. But, I mean, nobody else in double figures. You're not going to win many games this time of year. And, again, it was a great run up until that point. But Oregon just too much down the stretch. And then Oregon's center in Fale Dante, right, who's going to be a darling of the NCAA tournament if Oregon makes a run.
He was bugging me a lot.
Buddy, in his last two games against CU down the stretch this season, including in the title game, 23-for-23 from the floor.
Dude, wow. That is
it's like
impressive.
Prime Shaq.
Yeah.
What are we talking about?
He was, especially against you, doing whatever he wanted inside the painted area, putbacks, dunks, rebounds. He was doing everything. And there's some times, I know he's a college dude, but, you know, it's different now with NILs, Matt. But there's some times watching the Buffs throughout the year and certainly over this weekend, taking it in a lot. Like, sometimes I want to just grab Tristan Da Silva and be like, do you want this?
Hey,
are you going to try today?
You wouldn't be alone.
Okay.
You wouldn't be alone.
Look, like, hey, man, why don't you have all the talent. It's all right there for him to take over.
Just he hadn't been very aggressive this year.
He's
struggling to kick it into first gear against those good teams. But I'll say he accepted the challenge defensively because he's an undersized guy. And it wasn't like he succeeded with the challenge on Dante, but he at least accepted it. So I thought he did some decent things. They need him to be way better if they want to make any sort of run. And they're already being picked as somewhat of a darling. Like, look, as Nico Medved said yesterday when addressing the team after it all came out, head coach in Fort Collins, he said, look, we're going to make the best of it. And every single year, somebody from the play-in goes on a run. We all remember when UCLA made the play-in and then took it to the Final Four. I'm not saying the Buffs or the Rams are going to do that, but I'm also not saying it's impossible that they couldn't at least make it out of the first weekend. You get hot. That's what March is all about.
No doubt.
Survive in advance.
That's it.
Survive in advance.
We have made it. The brackets are out. That means you should be and can be going to denversports.com/hoops to sign up for our Sport Clips 5K bracket challenge. Of course, entry will end before the first game coming up on March 21st. But I've been telling you all last week, you're going to sign up, fill out a bracket. You're going to fill out 15 brackets if you're that guy or gal. So why not have a chance at 5K on the line? Bragging rights are great. 5K in your wallet is even better. So head to denversports.com/hoops to sign up for that Sport Clips 5K bracket challenge. We'll reset that conversation, talk about it throughout the day, how many brackets we're going to fill out. But let's chat about a little quarterback movement. Justin Fields finally was traded. Should the Broncos have been on that conversation now knowing what the cost was for Justin Fields? We're having that conversation next.
Denver Sports Station 104.3 The Fan presents Stokely and Josh.
the final quarterback domino would fall, and the answer was this weekend.
Ryan Tannehill got signed?
No, no. I guess there is that final domino. Okay, okay. That's like a quarter of a domino that's like been cut off and it's 50 years old and nobody wants
to
play
with it. Plastic domino, yeah.
That's what Ryan Tannehill is. Yeah, he's still out there and available. I'm sure there are teams lining up at his agent's office to talk about terms for a new deal. But I'm talking about Justin Fields. What were the Bears going to do? I think a lot of us assumed what they were going to do, and it's what they did. But the team and the cost was a surprise. So if you missed it over the weekend, the Chicago Bears and Pittsburgh Steelers agreed upon a trade for Justin Fields. The Steelers get Fields to go back up Russell Wilson, and in return, the Bears are going to get a sixth-round pick. That could turn into a fourth-round pick, depending on playing time for young Justin Fields. So, Matt, that's my first takeaway. All right, Pittsburgh, surprise, because they just went and got old Russ. But again, it's a backup market for Justin Fields. And then the second and maybe the bigger surprise for me was the cost of doing business. A sixth-round pick, even if it does turn into a fourth, dependent on playing time. A fourth-round pick for Justin Fields, I understand that it's the backup market, but it's still lower than what I thought it was going to cost an NFL team.
Yeah, no question. I think even a month ago, there's a viral clip going around right now on social media of Mel Kiper Jr. talking about Justin Fields fetching the eighth overall pick. Yeah. So you weren't alone. I think we all thought the asking price would be a little higher. But if you think about it, it really shouldn't be that much of a surprise. He's not a very good quarterback, okay? He's a younger guy who has made his hay with his legs. That's what he's done. And yes, okay, he's had different coaches and different coordinators, but the NFL just told you what they think of Justin Fields. And they told you what they thought of him during the draft, too. Mm-hmm. That's why guys went before him. They thought, okay, he's a quarterback three on the board. If we go back and look at that draft class, it does not look too shiny right now, okay? So, yes, I understand that there's a little bit of a surprise there, and I was really stunned to see all the people going, a sixth round, well, it turns into a fourth if he plays, okay? So if the Broncos, and I heard a lot of Broncos fans, boy, the Broncos could have given up a sixth-round pick for this guy. Well, it would have been a fourth-round pick, and do you want to give up a fourth-round pick right now? I don't know. You're only getting 1 year of Justin Fields for a fourth. And if you want him next year, you got to pay him $25 million. And they're not going to want to pay him $25 million next year. It's what we've been talking about all along. Sean Payton needs somebody to fit his system.
Yeah.
And guess what? You hired Sean Payton. You didn't hire somebody else. And I've heard the argument, well, a good coach can adapt to his players. Well, guess what? We haven't seen what his players look like. He hasn't even gotten a shot to do that yet. This is year two for him. I'm curious to see what his system will look like and his vision will look like. If it's going to work with him, it's going to be his way.
That's exactly right. And it's, you go get Justin Fields, because I had that thought. I think it's natural. Like, man, shouldn't the Broncos have been in that conversation? My brain actually went to the Jerry Jeudy trade. Offer them that fifth and the sixth you got for Jerry Jeudy. I could trick myself into going Justin Fields for Jerry Jeudy just to see what it looks like. Down for that, right? I could have talked myself into that. But I'm more of what you're saying. If Justin Fields were to come to Denver and be the Broncos quarterback in 2024, we learn nothing. We learn nothing about Sean. We might learn some stuff about the roster and the guys around it, who you can keep and who you cannot keep for the turnaround, whenever that may come, 25 or 26. But as far as Sean goes, we don't learn anything about his system, his quarterback. So you just kick the can down the road the way this organization has been kicking the can down the road for 7-8 seasons. So I'm glad that they weren't in on the Justin Fields thing. Now, that's how I feel. Broncos country, you let us know how you feel. Did you think that Justin Fields would come in here and save the Denver Broncos? Two ways to answer that question. RamosLaw.com text line 303-713-1043, or the Twitch feed. That thing's open and rolling. I see a few of you over there. Our guy Nate for Hart is in there. We're getting to some Avs talk coming up, Nate for Hart. But that's twitch.tv/DenverSportsCom. All right. There you go. Nice wave to the people. See Matt's cool hat, the North Face. Are those the Flat Iron? Those aren't the Flat Irons.
No, that's the company, the North Face. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You familiar? They make jackets.
I've heard
and things.
Yeah. Okay. It's, again, a lot of the...
You don't have a North Face? We'll have to get you a nice North Face jacket.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we have to. Free plug.
Right. Yeah. A lot of those Buffs fans you mentioned in segment one, cutting checks from their parents to get to the tournament, they're rocking that.
They are. No question. Well, it's chilly in Boulder.
It is. Yeah. It is. Now let's go to Pittsburgh. What do you think Russ's feelings for? Let's try to get inside the head of Russell Wilson. That's a scary moment. But when
that shouldn't
be
too hard.
When they were, when the news announced that Justin Fields is going. Now he tweeted, quarterback room going to be fire with his emojis. But that's, you know, that's Russ playing the card that everybody thinks, well, he thinks everybody wants to hear. What do you think the real conversation was? Russ, Sierra, and Matt Smith fly on the wall when
I'm in the room with the two of them.
Yeah.
Well, I know. I don't know what that conversation would be like, honestly, at all, quite frankly. I can just tell you, Ian Rappaport yesterday put out there that before the trade call with the Bears was made from the Steelers' perspective, they called Russell Wilson to assure him that he will be the starter and Fields will be the backup. Okay, so Russ's camp also wanting to make sure that everybody knows that it is the way it is. But it could have also been from the Steelers' perspective, because the Steelers recognize that fans will be quickly calling for Justin Fields if it doesn't work out. Now, we could play the over-under game.
Yeah,
be week
we will.
Six and a half, week seven and a half. Okay, but I'm not surprised that you heard that report, because we also just got a report from Pro Football Talk that the Giants meeting with Russell Wilson included no guarantees that he would play over Daniel Jones. Russell's whole goal was to go somewhere where he would be the starter and hopefully for multiple years. We also heard over the weekend from Jerry Dulac that the Steelers told Russell Wilson they want to get something done long term with him after the season. Let's think about how that conversation went. You ask me to be a fly on the wall? I'll be a fly on the wall with you for that one. No. After the year, Russ. We'd love to get that done. You know, after the year.
Yeah.
Okay, after the year. And then the guy shoots over, you know, looks over, shoots him a wink. Yeah. After the year.
Right.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. But that's what he wanted. He wanted a multiple-year contract. He wanted to be the man, because that's how Russ still sees himself. And Pittsburgh's going to give him his last professional opportunity to be the man. Mm-hmm. So it better work here for Russ, because if it doesn't, Justin Fields will be starting by like week 12.
I agree. I do agree with you. And yeah, they had to coddle a little bit, the phone call. I expected that to be made so that Russ's camp didn't lose their minds with everything that was going on. So yeah, the over-under game, let's just get Steelers-Broncos week one so that we don't have to worry about that.
Do you want it week one?
Hell yeah, I want it week one. You know?
Give me like week four. Well, you know, like let that character, I really don't want it week one. But Jared Stidham.
0-3 at that point, like.
Just rip the Band-Aid off, get it over with. The Broncos have had bad week ones anyway. They lost to the Raiders last year, the Seahawks the year before that. Might as well tack another one on there. Is that what you're thinking?
That's kind of what I'm thinking, yeah.
Might as well. Rip the Band-Aid. Okay.
So, yeah, that's – I think we'll see some Justin Fields. Yeah, but I don't know exactly when that is going to be. But that was the last little domino that fell. And you did mention Ryan Tannehill still out there. Even a guy like Trevor Siemian is still out there for the Broncos. But we should just stop that conversation entirely. They're rolling Jared Stidham and Bo Nix. That's what it's going to be week one against the Steelers or whoever it may be. But we just had the talk there. They're out. They're done. They weren't ever in on any real quarterbacks anyway. They hinted at Sam Darnold, but Mike Kliss told us on this station, as soon as it got to a $10 million figure, they were out of that conversation. So they didn't even have – their plan B was Sam Darnold, and they didn't get it.
Did you see the – piece that Kliss put out this week I thought was interesting? He mentioned a couple of names, and obviously he brought up Sam Darnold again, but he also brought up Zach Wilson's name again. Mm-hmm. He brought up Malik Willis's name from the Titans, which audibly made me laugh because no chance. I mean, if it didn't work with Russ and it's not going to work with Justin Fields, why in the world would you go down that road? No way. And then he also brought up Taysom Hill's name again.
I know.
And wouldn't it just be like Sean Payton to be waiting out the Saints to make a draft night trade for Taysom Hill?
I hope that's not the case.
Why? He's a good football player.
No, he's not.
He's not a good football player. Every time he carries the ball, he's not. Do the Broncos need help on the 1 yard line? Are you trying to win games or not?
Yeah. He's an all right football player.
I'm not trying to win games, so I'm okay. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, Taysom Hill.
He's a good football player.
Yeah, how many MVP votes has he got?
What? Oh, my God. That's your scale for being a good football player.
How many game-winning touchdowns?
Then there's almost no good football players in the NFL.
How many game-winning touchdowns has Taysom Hill had? How many times in the playoffs has Taysom Hill helped his team get over the hump?
I would say that on a bad football team, he's been a solid football player, and that could be a fun little wrinkle. I wouldn't be opposed.
He's a cute gadget guy.
Yeah.
That's what he is.
Yeah, of course.
And it's 2024.
He's a joker. And Sean loves his jokers.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Want to see how I got these scars?
I'm out on Taysom Hill. I'm out on Malik Willis. I'm out on Taysom Hill. I'm all right with it, Matt. It's Jarrett Stidham and it's Bo Nix. I've accepted that. The rest of you should, because that's what it's going to look like come August when the team reports to camp. All right, let's take a timeout when we get back. Tough one. Tough break yesterday for the Denver Nuggets. They tried to keep that road winning streak alive as they did against the Spurs, but came up just short in Dallas. Kyrie in that dang left hand will reset the weekend that was for the Nuggets next.
It's Stokely and Josh on Denver's Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
The Nuggets are red hot out of the break, despite a loss yesterday to Dallas. Kyrie Irving, a game winner against the Nuggets. We're going to get to that in a moment. Start back on Friday when they were taking on the Spurs in Austin, Texas, and we're looking to make it five straight road wins. That's exactly what they did, and they did it by double digits, five straight wins on the road to... by double digits, a mark that no NBA team had done this year. And in fact, it was the Nuggets' second five-game winning streak on the road. So they can handle business outside of Ball Arena. And a couple of things I want to chat about from that Friday night game. First, the play at the end of the first half. Like, I tweeted it out, like, this is varsity versus JV. Joker inbounds right back to Joker from Peyton Watson. He finds CB half court, then lobs it up to Peyton Watson. I mean, it was literally like JV versus varsity.
The Spurs game. Okay.
And then there was also a moment where, now Zeke Nnaji, I'm not the biggest Zeke Nnaji guy. I think that there was a big.
You wouldn't have paid him that money?
Absolutely not.
Really?
Absolutely not.
Wow. I'm shocked.
Yeah, right? Don't you see his production? But he dunked. I mean, he yammed one on Victor Wembanyama on Friday night. So big win on Friday. Took care of business against a bad, just a crappy Spurs team, which you love to see it. Greg Popovich just having to take all those L's. It's one of my favorite things to see.
You know, the Spurs, we could really have an interesting conversation about where the Spurs are and where the Broncos are going to be. I think they're not too far away, but the Broncos just don't have that generational dude. But yes, that game on Friday night, what was interesting about it is you heard the comments from the team and from Michael Malone pregame. They were not happy to be in Austin playing at a G League arena. They didn't understand the point of it, but they still got the job done, 117-106 Friday night. And then yesterday, Josh, was a great example to me of just how good this Nuggets team is, even in a loss. So I'll give you a little backstory. So I do the show 7 to 10 on Sunday, you know, every Sunday.
Yeah.
And I'm tired by the end of it, right? And so at like 3 o'clock, I always get sleepy. So it's hard on football Sundays because I got to rally through it. Mm-hmm. But yesterday I just passed out on the couch, like maybe 72-70. That was the score in the third quarter.
Yeah.
So later, I pulled it back up to where I fell asleep at and then, you know, started a couple minutes before, you know, get myself back into it. At one point in the fourth quarter, it's like 98-85. They were down 13. And I'm going, and I knew the result. I knew Kyrie hit the game winner. And I'm going, man, they came back from this with 6 minutes left. And sure enough, that was after a 7-0 Dallas run. Nuggets respond with a 13-3 run of their own over the next 4 minutes and walk the Mavericks down. It's Nuggets basketball. Then the cherry on top is the Jamal Murray three, puts them up 105-102. And then two bad breakdowns on sideline off, you know, out of bounds plays. Aaron Gordon gets caught under a screen. Mm-hmm. Luka hits a quick three. And then, of course, Kyrie makes a circus shot. And that's what it takes to beat the Denver Nuggets. But in between that, Murray had a great look that would have ended the game.
It was an early jumper. Took it way too early, though.
A little bit. But regardless, even if he hits it there, they're still up. And the worst they probably do is go to overtime Mavericks. My point is this. They had that game signed, sealed, and delivered. Dallas just made a few more plays than they did down the stretch. And guess what? It's 1 of 82.
Yeah.
So in the grand scheme of things, as far as losses go, to me, I thought it was actually indicative of just how hard it is to even beat the Nuggets one time.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Yeah,
because, look, that's a solid Dallas team, but they're not world beaters. But this is one game in the regular season where Jokic and Murray were both not very good.
Nope.
I think at one point in the fourth quarter, they were a combined 9 of 31. Something like that from the field. How often does that happen?
Yeah, it never happens.
That's my point here, is that, look, I mean, okay, it's a loss. but it actually kind of had me feeling better about the team because that was a win. It should have been a win. Dallas just made a few plays. You tip your cap, you move on.
Okay. I like that approach because you're absolutely right. It did take all of those things to beat the world champion Denver Nuggets. But what Murray and Joker's basically all game was just slow, off night, not something you normally see from those guys. You thought, all right, maybe Michael Porter Jr. is going to pick up this slack because he scored 12 in the first quarter, finished with 20. You know, Michael's got to be more aggressive when you're having a night like that. And then the bench is the bench. You can't rely on them to give you everything. I really thought it was a 9-0 run in the third quarter by Dallas. It was that little sequence where they got, three back-to-back-to-back offensive rebounds. Malone calls a rage timeout and is out right there boxing out invisible dudes.
Screaming.
Trying to show people how to get a rebound.
Screaming at the guys. I'm glad you brought that moment up. Actually, that was the moment that also caught my eye because it told me what Michael Malone's whole goal is here down the stretch. We've seen him get a little bit more creative with the rotations. The bench is getting a little bit more of a run.
Yep.
You got to prepare these guys due to injury, you know, God forbid, or foul trouble in the playoffs. But you may need some of these younger players down the stretch, and that's what he's doing now. And I think that's why he's been so hypersensitive about them letting down in the third quarter. What was it, the 44-24 third quarter they got outscored by? Was it Utah?
It was Utah.
It was, yeah. Utah, right?
They won 142-121, and Michael Malone was mad about them scoring 121.
Well, Michael Malone, what he is guarding against are those moments in the playoffs when they let down, especially when the starters aren't on the floor. And I think that's what really triggers him right now. Yeah. He's like, no. If you do this now and we do it in the playoffs, we're dead in the water in game 3 against Phoenix or whatever.
That's kind of my beef with Malone, though.
Yeah.
Has his team not earned benefit of the doubt? He uses that card from time to time. We're world champions. We've faced all the adversity. There's not a situation that this group has not seen. Yet he loses his freaking mind, Matt, when those situations come up. And I understand he's a coach. He's never going to take a playoff. That's how he is. But, man, like, there are times, like, pick your battles is what I always tell Coach Malone. Pick your battles. You keep yelling at the same thing. In a, I don't want to say meaningless, but close to meaningless regular season game, and then you want to, you know, destroy them in the postseason about it. I just think with some players, that can get numb if you do it too much at the wrong times.
But who's he yelling at?
He's yelling at Jr.
See, I thought maybe it was Porter, but I thought in that moment specifically it was Najee, it was Watson, it was Brown, because all three of those guys were under the basket. Mm-hmm. And he kind of, I think he's taking it out on the younger guys to make them kind of realize what's at stake here. Maybe there's something that he sees. Look, typically they respond to him pretty well, but you're absolutely right. You only have so much runway if you start yelling at Jokic and Murray. But I don't see it as him yelling at Jokic and Murray. I think he's trying to get the young guys' attention to really dial in their sense of urgency because, I mean, I think everybody would agree that up until maybe the last week or so, the bench has been underwhelming for the most part all season. Now, over the last week, as they've gotten a little bit more opportunity,
Christian Brown's been good.
They've been more productive. So I think he's just trying to ratchet up the screws on some of the younger guys to go, look, hey, we're going to need you guys here. I mean, Bruce Brown and Jeff Green are gone. This is your time now, but don't think for a second that you're going to play if you display habits that are not that of a champion.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that part of it, but I just, like
he's,
I said,
he's
I always go,
strong.
Yeah,
he's
like,
strong.
Hey, man, they've earned benefit of the doubt. That they raised the Larry O.B. trophy a year ago. You can dial it back, you know, from time to time from Coach Malone.
Larry O.B.
That's right. So they are champs. I want to get into that Jamal shot briefly, too. He had a shot at a buzzer beater end of the half yesterday in Dallas, too. He does this from time to time, and I feel like it's that, I said it on Friday, it's that little bit of Will Barton that still kind of exists in the Nuggets world of last second shot, dude wants it, the other four dudes could go sit down because he's not going to pass it. He did that in the end of the first half, end of the second quarter, all good. End of the game, Nikola Jokic doesn't touch the basketball, game on the line.
He got a great look, though.
I got a problem with that, though. Like, also have some recognition. I know you got a great look, but you started the action 7 seconds too early.
Wasn't that ATO after timeout?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Malone probably drew it up for him, if we're being real.
But you think Malone's telling him you take that jumper at 7 seconds or you take that jumper at 3 seconds?
I would agree with you, but I think my personal philosophy on it is if you're talking about that type of a game, yeah, you'd probably rather have it with 5. But that's, look, anything under 10, and I think you live with as long as it's a good look. How many times do you think he's going to make that shot in the playoffs?
I do, yeah.
Yeah. So to me, you missed it.
Okay.
All right. You know, it sucks, but I'm not going to rake him over the coals on that one. He was the one who kept him in the game primarily in the fourth quarter.
I mean, that three you mentioned was huge to make him up three.
Massive. And he made another three a little bit before that. So Jamal, I think, wakes up. But unfortunately, I think the frustration is, hey, man, I mean, you can be that guy in the first and the second quarter on occasion to make sure you don't have to be that dude in the fourth. But look, I'm not gonna nitpick that much in the regular season because he got a great look. I'm not gonna argue with it. I'll live and die with that shot every time.
And I mean, they are 11-2, so we are nitpicking. Like 11-2 after the break, right in control to have their destiny of being the number one overall seed in the West. They still got a chance at setting a franchise record for wins. So tough loss. But it took a left-handed one-handed left-hand hook shot type of thing from Kyrie to get it done. I like the way you looked at it. That's what it takes to beat the Denver Nuggets. All things have to go right, and you still need a buzzer beater with the opposite hand. So I like that.
Has it worked out for the other 11 teams they played since the All-Star break all that well? So yeah, I'm pretty comfortable with where they're at.
Well, the Nuggets 11-2 since the All-Star break. The Avs are on fire. They stayed red hot in Edmonton on Saturday night thanks to a little tap-in from Arturi Lehkonen. We got to talk about that play that set it up as well. That is next.
You're listening to Stokely and Josh on Denver Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
Are red hot. Matt Smith is sitting in for Stoke today. You want to join the show? Hit us up. A couple ways to do it. 303-713-1043 on the RamosLaw.com text line. And I know my guy Nate for Hart over on Twitch is excited for the Avs conversation. That's twitch.tv/DenverSportsCom. Join us right there. All right, Matt, I want to talk about what the Avalanche have done since the addition of the new guys, what they've already done here on a four-game road trip. They've taken six of a possible 8 points already. They are rolling thanks to a last-second goal, 0.5 on the clock, Arturi Lehkonen. And I always like to say he's not my Turi, he's not your Turi, he's our Turi, and had the game winner. You like that one?
You planted your flag with that one,
yeah,
have you?
I try to stay with that. Anytime he scores, I try to tweet that out so that it's known that it's mine.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
And I think from all of us, you can have
thank
that
you,
one.
Thank
yeah,
you.
No
thank
problem.
You.
No problem.
But as good as a little tap in was, a little taparoo there,
tap,
Matt.
Tap.
The play to set it up from Nathan MacKinnon. Unreal. First of all, gets to the puck first. It's down there in the corner. He has a little self-kick pass to himself on the backhand and then just throws it out in front of the net, knowing that his guy Arturi would be there. Lecky didn't even know that it found the back of the net until he turned around to see his guys celebrating. And they steal a victory up in Edmonton in overtime. A hell of a performance on Saturday night.
Yeah, the Avs have had a really good week. Probably their best week of the season, all things considered. They had a good one in January, too, but I would probably put this above that simply because to look like they've looked already with so many new players in the lineup is really impressive. And you bring up with a half a second left in overtime, they win that game. That was a really interesting hockey game, okay? Second period on was one of the best hockey games I've seen this season. It was literally edge of your seat action. Mm-hmm. I could not sit back in my chair because when the Avs and Oilers get together, they just play at a different pace than everybody in the NHL. And it's not often, Josh, that the Avs look like the more tired team in the third period. Playing at altitude, they've got the experience with it. Not to mention, they've got the world-class talent to back it up. But I thought they did. In that third period, they kind of let the rope slip a little bit, right? Zach Hyman kicks in a goal. That gets wiped off the board. All right, well, the Avs still have the lead. Then a couple of minutes later, the Oilers tie it up. Then the Oilers get their second goal. And it wasn't until the Avs got down that they got back in the game. Right. And it was Nathan MacKinnon airing out the gas tank at the end, going into the corner, kicking it to his tape, throwing it in the mixer. And Lehkonen, man, he has saved Nate's bacon several times this year. It was the home point streak where Nate flipped it over to him for the empty net goal.
That's right.
And then it was on Saturday in Edmonton. And the Avs take the first of three matchups over what was the final 15 games of the season for the Avs.
Wow. Yeah, he's been so good, man. Alexander Georgiev, a save in that overtime period, which is a breakaway out in front by himself and gets the stop on the Oilers play. I don't even remember who it was, the
Nugent
guy out
Hopkins.
Front.
Yeah, great
It was
play.
Nugent Hopkins, but it's like a little glove save, covers it quickly with the leg pad. He was outstanding in that overtime as well.
Can
it,
we stay there real quick
yeah, please,
on Georgiev?
Please.
That was such a big performance from him. That was the guy I was looking towards the most on Saturday night to have a big night. Because there's been a little rumbling. All right, well, Eustace is playing better than Georgiev yeah. here lately. Well, maybe are we thinking about a goalie? No, you're not thinking about a goalie controversy. Georgiev is your starter, but they have to build confidence back in him. Now, they had to give Onanen probably more starts in a more condensed period of time than mm-hmm. they normally would, because they had to evaluate whether or not he could be the backup goaltender past the trade deadline. But that was a huge moment. You just talked about the save on the breakaway on Nugent Hopkins. Those are the saves Georgiev hasn't made this year. Those are the saves that win you games in the playoffs, and in a playoff-style atmosphere on the road, that is one that can propel you to going, okay,
yeah.
now I'm starting to feel my rhythm again here in net. That was a really good sign for me with Alexander Georgiev. And coming here down the home stretch, I imagine we'll see him quite a bit.
You know what else we saw was a penalty shot for Jonathan Drouin, and he couldn't score. I kept thinking to myself, like, we get so mad. I'll speak for myself, but I assume other Avalanche fans feel the same way. Like, when a guy gets an opportunity on a penalty shot and doesn't convert, you know, you're like, come on, man. You can't score one-on-one, knowing that that's a professional goaltender on the other end. And I kept thinking to myself Saturday, I'm like, what is that the equivalent to? Like, is that the equivalent of dropping a tap pass in the end zone, smoking a layup with a chance to go up? Like, but that's there a is a question. Defender there. You know what I mean? It just seems...
Missing a dunk?
It seems like it should be so easy, but there's a professional NHL-level goaltender standing in front of you, yet I lose my damn mind when Drouin can't find the back of the net on a penalty shot.
It's probably like missing a poster dunk.
Okay.
I think that's pretty comparable
right.
to it, because it's not easy to accomplish a poster dunk, and it's not easy to score on a penalty shot
yeah.
either. So, yeah, that game had a bit of everything.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you love Avs and Oilers. And afterwards, you saw the whole hockey community come out and go, oh, man, I'd love to see 7 games of that. I said, 7 games? I got my broom from the last time they played. I don't need no 7 games. The Avs own the Oilers just like the Nuggets now own the Lakers
yeah.
is what it feels like.
That's a nice comp.
And it's a beautiful feeling.
Yeah, it is.
It's a warm and fuzzy feeling. I'm by the fireplace with a nice cup of hot cocoa
mm-hmm.
is what it is. Look, the Avs had a great week. And the other goal that I thought was important, well, first of all, the first two were really important because Sean Walker scored both of them.
I have loved seeing what Sean... I was talking to Stoke on Friday last week about the 2022 season when they became Stanley Cup champions. Their defensemen had the ability, and the players around them had the awareness to know when a defenseman was going to jump up into the play, the way Sean Walker did a couple of times on Saturday night. They're not quite there yet, but they were in 2022. They have the capability to get back to what they were in 2022 with aggressive play from the blue line with a guy like Sean Walker.
The second goal was really special
mm-hmm.
because it was Casey Mittelstadt. And what have I been saying? I want to see him do. Generate for others.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about it last week and certainly the week before. His passing ability is his best ability. And Sean Walker recognized that the offense had gotten stagnant. Nobody was moving. And here's Mittelstadt buried in the half wall on the corner looking for options. Walker jumps up into the play, sees nobody else is moving, splits the circles, comes down, far post, and buries it. Tie ball game. Well, that's a 29-year-old right there who recognized that. And he's seen a lot of hockey. So far, the Sean Walker addition, in my opinion, has been the best addition. But make no mistake that Casey Mittelstadt's upgrade over Ryan Johansson,
yeah.
I mean, it's night and day because you can officially send a second line. You know how many minutes Ross Colton played in Edmonton in an overtime game?
I don't.
949.
Wow.
Had to be the least, I haven't checked, had to be the least he's played all year, but Bednar can do that now because he's got the depth to do it now.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have the depth to do it before. So McFarland and Sakic, like we talked about at the deadline, what they accomplished was they came out and they gave their guys a chance.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's going to be good enough, but I know they got a shot at it now where they did not pre-deadline. And that is full credit to the front office.
No doubt.
Because if you want to compete, this is how you have to do it. They pushed their chips all in. And we talked about Mittelstadt. We talked about Walker. We did not talk about Brandon Duhaime. He has been really good
mm-hmm.
for a depth piece. And we talked about it a little bit last week with Phil. I think that's the Logan O'Connor replacement.
Mm.
You look at his analytics when he's on the ice, they're dominating action. So far, so good. Give me five more games, though.
Okay.
But so far, so good.
So five games, and you can have a clear, well, at least a better picture of what it could 100%. Look like into the postseason.
100%.
That's fair. That's more than fair.
I mean, look, that was the first time Arturi Lehkonen had played with the new guys because he'd been sick. And how nice was it to have him back?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Val could even take a little bit of a night off because
Lucky
was in the lineup and he did some of that dirty work in the greasy area. So you got to love it from the Avs. Now, you got one more against the Blues on this road trip tomorrow night. And that, you know, our favorite guy in the world, Jordan Binnington, that absolute loser.
I'd like to. He could catch these hands any time.
You know what? You know what? He's taller than you, and I think he'd give it to you, but I would like to watch it.
Sometimes a great man once told me, you don't fight to win, you fight to fight.
Well, a great man once told me, it's not the size of the dog.
Yeah, that's right.
It's
that's
the size of the fight in the dog.
I also, speaking of fighting, can we give some love to Josh Manson? Who the hell was that? That dude was like 7'4" that he went after
Desjardins,
on the ice for Edmonton.
And that was a real fight.
He got one good one in there, too, as he was picking him up from the ice. Connected with one of them, I was like, man, Josh Manson, he's one of my guys for the Avalanche. Love that dude.
Compared to the Nikita Zadorov fight from the Vancouver game, that was a real fight.
Right.
That was a real fight. I don't want to see too much more because they need a healthy Josh Manson. Yeah. But without Curtis McDermott in the lineup, now without Logan O'Connor, guess who's next up to scrap and chuck him a little bit? It's Josh.
Yep, that's right. Avalanche fans, you got to be feeling great. Let us know on the RamosLaw.com text line, 303-713-1043. Somebody's fired up that you just said Casey Mittelstadt's name, just in general, that you acknowledged him.
You're welcome.
That's the voice of Matt Smith. I'm Josh Dover. We're going to kick off quarter number two, going back to the Broncos. They found their replacement for Josie Jewell, but still haven't added to the quarterback room. Details on both next.